Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. This is my kind of weather.
Springtime's here, huh?
Springtime.
Now for
here.
Sure. No more snow, right? You promise.
I promise.
Now, we're into April almost.
Although I don't think I'd do my planting yet. I think we'll still have a couple more frosts.
You think?
Mm-hmm, I do.
Okay. Mark it down.
You got to wait till mid-April to plant my garden.
Okay. So when are you going to plant my garden?
I don't know.
Mid-April?
You know, I'll just bring you tomatoes and stuff. How's that?
Tomatoes and eggs.
Yeah, lots of those.
I'm going to plant those. It's Easter.
I can't wait to see how they die, you know, because none of the eggs are really white.
Right.
Some of them are really brown.
Good colors.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
Experiment. I'm sure you will.
I'll experiment this weekend. I'll let you know. How's that?
Deal.
All right. Well, I'm excited about our show this morning, Lee. You know, we like to keep it positive on the Atlanta Business Radio Show, and right now there's one market that people just seem to be grumbling about, but we're going to give some good insight this morning on how you can be a successful home seller in this market, because everybody says it's a buyer's market. Let's talk about the seller today. We've got great experts lined up this morning, and our first is Vanessa Westfall of Keller Williams. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you, Amy.
So give us the real scoop. You know, sometimes people are wondering, what does it mean to have a buyer's market? What's a seller's market? Shed some light on that for us.
Well, there's an actual definition of what a buyer's market and a seller's market is, and we have to look at the inventory. Typically, anything under 6 months worth of residential inventory is going to be defined as a seller's market, and anything over 6 months is going to be a buyer's market. But the reality is, Amy, is that every day people need to buy new houses. They have to move. They've got job changes. They have babies on the way, kids going away to school. So, you know, change of life requires a change of residence sometimes.
Now, in this market, is it are we still getting an influx of new people moving here?
Absolutely. Atlanta is a very strong economy. As you know, we have many Fortune 500 companies located in and around Metro Atlanta. So we still see growth, and we have projected growth for you know, years to come.
Are there a lot of homes on the market because people overbought? You know, because I think I see some people downsizing, and I'm not sure if that's a function of the economy. But, I mean, what are you seeing as far as the folks that are selling?
Well, the reality is we actually have less inventory today than we had 2 years ago, and that's a good thing. As we bring the inventory down, that brings hopefully the, you know, it's just a typical supply and demand. So when you have less supply, you're going to have more demand in time.
Now, is that because they're just not building at the pace they were building 2 years ago?
That is definitely one of the main reasons, yes. One of the biggest components a few years ago is that we had far too much new construction on the market, and that was just projected for that growth.
Is that primarily like homes, or were they condos, or both?
All of the above.
Yeah. Is the condo market still oversaturated?
It definitely is. That's going to take a much longer time to recover.
Mm-hmm. Because people were buying at the peak, I would imagine, they were buying several. They thought, like, oh, I'm just going to buy this and flip it before it even is built, right?
It's amazing. When you look at human psychology, when you're in a buyer's market, people will tend to, you know, fear buying when it's really the prime opportunity, the prime time to buy.
Right.
And when they're in a seller's market, there's this mad rush to go out and buy properties and pay top dollar for
it. Well, you know, when like your guy who does your landscaping has three condos in Midtown, you know, he's buying them in the block. Maybe you're at the peak of a bubble there a little bit.
Yeah, I would say so. So we're currently in the buyer's market, right?
We are.
How would you define it?
I think so.
Now, tell us, you mentioned in your bio there are three P's to selling a home. Can you walk us through that?
Well, I think a traditional realtor will do three basic things. They're going to put the sign in the front yard, they're going to put a lockbox on the door, and they're going to pray that it sells. When you look at a more professional realtor, somebody who does this on a full-time basis, somebody who uses statistics and the tools at hand, they're able to take it to the next level. They do kind of the fourth, fifth, and sixth P, if you will, and that's they're going to be price watching. And that's very important, especially in today's market when pricing is changing dramatically from month to month and year to year. So it's really imperative when you have a seller to price that property right, to price it right up front so that they're going to be one of the successful sellers. They're going to be the ones, one of the 13% who actually sell in less than 1 month.
Wow, that would be huge to sell in less than 1 month.
So only 13% actually put their home up and sell it in a month.
In a month in the metro Atlanta area. We're looking at about, this is very generic statistics for the metro area, but we're looking at about 40% of homes that will eventually sell. But if they're not priced right up front or they're not adjusted very quickly to capture those buyers, we're looking at up to a year and more. I mean, there are several people who have had their house on the market for well over a year.
So it sounds like pricing it right up front is a key decision folks make when trying to sell a home. How do you help influence that? Because that's got to be hard.
Because aren't some of these people like backwards in their home? Like, how do you deal with that?
They are. It is unfortunate. But the reality is that if they have to sell, then the best advice that I can give them is to give them the statistics, the tools, and show them some of the competition and say, hey, listen, this is where your house has to be if you want to sell it and you want to sell it quickly. If they're upside down, I strongly urge them to make sure they're having conversation with the banks. If it's an emergency situation, then I have some advice to help them along the way. We have certified distressed experts that work day in and day out with banks that can give that kind of advice and that kind of guidance. But the reality is that, pricing it is imperative, and having that home in the top condition to capture those buyers and to get it sold quickly and to maximize their final sales price. If they can sell it in under 1 month, they're looking at about 97-98% sale to list price. If they're longer than that, if they don't hit that price up front, they're looking at about 78%.
Well, that's a pretty big difference. Now, you said something about the condition of a home. How important is that?
It's really imperative. I mean, if you're looking at your competition and you know that maybe one or two out of 10 in the neighborhood are going to sell at all in that 6 month period, you want to have that house be the star. And if you're not going to be the best looking house on the market, all you're going to do is drive those buyers to your competition.
Interesting way of putting it.
Now, because of the fallout in the real estate market, have you weeded out all those people who said they were real estate agents? You know, that, hey, I'm a real estate, like it seemed like everybody and their mother was a real estate agent. And, if they sold one house, maybe there was a relative of theirs. Are those all gone now?
Well, quite a few have pulled out of the market. But, mm-hmm. There are always going to be a few people that can really afford to keep their license and their board dues
right.
up. And they'll dabble, and they have enough friends and family members that they can, quote-unquote, help out here and there.
Right.
But I would say definitely this last 2 years has the cream has kind of come to the top.
Now, I would think one of the big benefits of dealing with a professional real estate person who does this 24/7 is that you know all the ins and outs, where they're basically going through the learning curve every time if they're only selling one house a year. Like, you know all the shortcuts, you know all the tricks, and that person is kind of muddling through each time.
And that's absolutely the truth. A true professional real estate agent needs to be in the mix. They need to be talking with clients on a regular basis. They need to know the other agents that are working out there in order to have those good relationships, because negotiations is so much of the game.
Right.
And what makes you different? I mean, there are a lot of real estate agents out there, and your clients have a lot of great things to say about you, but let our listeners know what makes you a little bit different.
Well, Amy, I do take my job seriously. It's not just a job. I worked in Fortune 500. I worked in healthcare. I did sales. I did project management, and I really enjoyed that time in my life. But there was a point where I knew that I needed to take it to the next level. And hey, I was a pretty good boss, and I thought, well, why don't I be my own boss?
Mm-hmm.
And so my mother was in real estate. I had that experience and that exposure as a child, and I just had an affinity for it. So I kind of took what I knew and applied it to what I loved and was able to interact with people on a regular basis and help them. And no better time in the last couple of years to help clients than, you know, than now. So
do you have an area you specialize in?
I do. It's not necessarily a physical or a geological area, but the area is marketing and statistics. And what I do is I can help people in, you know, whether it's Midtown or Buckhead or Smyrna or Tucker, to look at the data, because the data very rarely lies. What's selling, what's not selling, what's on the market today, what your competition is. Give them a game plan and then really advise them so that they can make the best decision, because ultimately they're the ones who are in control of whether that home is going to sell and if it's going to sell for top dollar.
Interesting. Now, I know a big component of selling a home is usually to qualify the buyer and see if they really qualify to buy that home. How do you go about that process?
Well, I work with an excellent lender. And what is important about that is that you have to attract qualified buyers, because you don't want to waste the time, one, of the buyer, and two, of your seller. And the selling process is so emotional. So when we get buyers in, quote-unquote buyers, we want to make sure that they really have what it takes to take it to contract and then to ultimately close. Because if that house has to be taken off the market, that could be detrimental to the seller. So we only want to bring in qualified buyers who can actually take it to closing.
Terrific. Maybe we should head to our next guest now. Vanessa, thanks for being with us today. Your passion is very evident. If folks want to contact you, how can they go about that?
The greatest way is just to email me at westfall@kw.com. It's WESTFALL @kw.com, or go to vanessawestfall.com.
Terrific. Thanks. You know, Lee, we talked about the financing component of it, and what a drag that would be to be a realtor and then get to the point where...
Right. You think it's done.
Yeah.
Not
happening. That's when you need a good lender. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We have Jenny Wagner from TriStone Financial.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm great. I assume that when Vanessa was talking about that great lender, she was talking about you, right?
Absolutely.
We'll just go with that.
Yeah, we're definitely going to go with that. So, Jenny, why should a seller be interested in having a good lender when they're buying a home?
Well, as Vanessa mentioned, they don't want to take their home off the market for any length of time if they don't have a qualified buyer. That's very important, especially in today's market. And one of the benefits a seller can have in their pocket is, if they are working with a trusted lender and they can make the choice whether they want to pay closing costs or not, and they can actually say, you know, we will pay closing costs for the buyer if you use this lender. It's not required, and they don't have to do that, but it lets the seller know that we have a qualified buyer. They know the process of the lender, and they know it's going to close on time. And if that seller wants to close quickly and they're working with a qualified lender that they know and have a trusted relationship with, then they know that that process is going to go quickly and get to the table to meet their needs.
And I know TriStone Financial has won some awards lately. I mean, they've been listed in the top in Georgia for years. Tell us a little bit about TriStone Financial and what makes them different as far as a lender.
TriStone Financial wants to create customers for life, and we actually have an incredible service platform. In dealing with folks buying a home and the amount of money they're spending, communication is key, and that's one of the things that we pride ourselves on. We have a system that we keep all parties in the loop from start to finish on the process, and we actually answer their questions before they pick up the phone to call us.
Now, how many homes does the average person buy in their lifetime? You know?
Well, I would say probably about two or three in a lifespan, but
right.
It really depends. I mean, Atlanta is an area where people are moving quite a bit.
Right.
We are actually in Georgia, Florida, and Alabama, so we can help people in all three states.
And so that's when you say customer for life, you mean like for other, like housing needs, might be second home or?
Yeah, a lot of people buy second home investment property if they're refinancing or making their first time purchase.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference? You're a mortgage consultant. What's the difference between a mortgage broker, a mortgage consultant, and a banker?
That's a good question. Especially in today's market, brokers actually have quite a bit of an advantage. If you were walking to a bank today, a depository area, like a Bank of America or a Wachovia, they have one resource in which they pull their rates and pricing from. A broker has several, and we have a lot of flexibility. So what we do is we make sure that we are looking across the market for that buyer to make sure we're providing the best rate and program possible.
Is it with you hear a lot about the credit markets being tight now? Is it still tight for home buyers? So do they have to like have more money down, or are there different rules now than there were from a few years ago?
They are. Things have tightened up a little bit, but there's still plenty of money to lend, and people are getting qualified every day. We have actually are going to have a record month here in April for TriStone Financial. There's a couple things that they look at are your credit scoring. And there's two different worlds in the lending world. There's a conventional world, and there's an FHA world, oh, three actually, and the jumbo world. Basically, in today's market, conventional and FHA are the two focuses that are really hot.
Right.
In conventional, you have to have a 740 credit score or above to really be considered to have A1 credit.
Now, is that, what is that historically? Is that a higher number than in the past?
Yeah, typically in the past, it's been 700 to 720.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, though, are referring to FHA these days because you can have a minimum score of a 620.
Oh,
now,
wow.
That has increased, though, because previously FHA would go down to 580.
Mm-hmm. Is there ways to kind of raise your score?
There are. There's a lot of it depends on the person's credit.
Right.
And how their credit is reporting, if they've had any late payments, if they have any collections.
Like paying more than the minimum, doesn't that help you? No?
No, it doesn't really help your score. What they look at is the balances. For example, if you have a high credit card limit of $5,000, they really want you to be at 70% or below as far as a balance goes. So that if you had $3,500 or below, then that's going to increase your score. And if you're below that even more, that will help you. But if you're above that and you're maxing out your limits, that's going to bring your score down.
Now, so is that something you can go to the credit card company and say, look, can you raise my limit so that I can be below that number?
You can. You can work with them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the credit card companies have their own guidelines. They
follow
these days.
Issues,
yeah.
Right?
I know there's been a first-time home buyer's tax credit. Can you talk a little bit about that? Is that still going on?
It is, but deadline is approaching fast. You do have to be under contract by April 30th and close by June 30th. There are some tax income limitations, though, and they kind of have different dates to them. So if you've purchased on or after January 1st of 2009 and on or before November 6th of 2009, the income limits for a single taxpayer are $75,000 and $150,000 for a married couple. If you've purchased after November 6th and on or before April 30th, those limits actually were raised. Single taxpayers are now moved up to $125,000, and married couples are moved up to $225,000.
Okay. And what is the credit?
It's an $8,000 tax credit.
So that's up for a first-time home buyer,
It's a first-time home buyer up to homes valued at $800,000.
Okay. And is there a move-up tax credit?
There is a move-up tax credit, you're absolutely right, of $6,500. You must have owned and lived in your previous home for five consecutive years out of the last eight to qualify for that.
And are people taking advantage of this?
Absolutely. And now's the time to do it. These rates are the lowest we've seen in many, many years. And if people are sitting on the fence, now's the time to get off and either refinance or make that purchase.
Are you doing a lot of refinancing right now?
There are quite a few. One of the things I pride myself on, though, is that I do a financial analysis for the customer to make sure that it does make sense. Some people hear those low rates on the radio and they just want that number. They want to say they have that rate. But if it doesn't make good financial sense for them, then I'm not going to recommend that they do that. So we take a look at their full scenario.
But those tax credits have nothing to do with refinancing, right?
Correct. Yeah, they're on purchases only.
Right.
How long have you been in your house, Lee?
Since 96.
Yeah, me too. 95. Mm-hmm. That's a long time.
Yeah. That's how we roll.
That is. That's how we roll. We love this area, right? That is a great area to live in. Now, how do you find people? How do you find your business? Do you work with a lot of different types of realtors? How do you find your business?
We do. Actually, realtors and past customers have helped to build our business. The service that we provide is very unique from other lenders. So when attorneys, realtors, buyers alike experience our process, they become very loyal customers very quickly, and the word spreads.
That's terrific. Mm-hmm. How can people contact you?
Easiest way is my office number is 678-336-5036, or they can email me at jwagner, which is W-A-G-N-E-R, at Tristone, T-R-I-S-T-O-N-E, financial.com.
And the website is?
www.tristonefinancial.com.
Wonderful. Thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you.
We appreciate all your knowledge, Jenny. And definitely, if you're considering refinancing or you're in the market to buy a new home, contact Jenny. Next up, you know, Lee, it's interesting when you look at homes. Have you remember that whole process of the inspection and you kind of hold your breath thinking, okay, hope they don't find anything. Our next guest, Ron, has sent me this quote. He says, just like Forrest Gump's mother said, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. But buying a home can be the same way. A thorough home inspection before buying opens the box and proves insight so you know what you're getting. Sellers can benefit too. That's so true. I mean, if you got into a home and found out that it wasn't what you thought, you'd be pretty disappointed. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show this morning. We have Ron Utterback. Welcome.
Thanks, Amy. Appreciate you having us here.
So, Ron, you've got a long history working in business. Maybe tell us a little bit about how you got into the home inspection business.
Well, for about 20 years prior to this, I was in corporate sales, primarily technology companies. And after having several of them go bankrupt or leave me in the Atlanta area without a job, I decided, somewhat like Vanessa said, I decided to manage myself. So I chose about 5 years ago to start a home inspection business.
Were you like into that handyman stuff? Like, what's the skill set you need to be a good home inspector?
As a homeowner, I have been my own handyman, if you will. There's not many projects I haven't been willing to tackle myself. I started out back even in my college days working for a residential designer, so I had
Some understanding.
I had some basis for understanding the construction process, at least for residential work.
And the engineering process, too, it looks like.
Right. I went through most of my college days as an engineering major and then eventually got introduced to computers and switched over to a computer science kind of degree.
So what does a residential inspection entail?
Well, first of all, we normally or typically do a comprehensive. That is, we do the whole home and the property it sits on. On occasion, we'll do just a roof or attic or just a foundation, but normally it's a comprehensive. That covers the grounds around the home, the appurtenances that are close to the home, like walkways and driveways. We look at the structure. That would include foundation, attic, roof, and the exterior walls and floors. Look at all the systems, electrical, plumbing, heating and air, as well as any drainage and guttering system that might be installed. And then lastly, on the interior, we look at the kitchen with fine detail and the appliances, bathrooms as well, and then a general view of the other interior parts of the home, primarily looking for defects and deficiencies in the home.
Has anything surprised you? Like you ever go into like a newer house and you're like, God, I can't believe how bad this is made.
Well, I think I'm probably always surprised. I understand. I spend 3 or 4 hours going through a home.
Right.
And I'm going in places where owners don't go.
And they don't want to go.
And don't want to go.
Right.
Attics, crawl spaces, getting on roofs. And there's probably not a home I haven't done that, you know, there hadn't been some surprise. Some of it stems from how the home has been maintained. Some of it stems from how well the owner was a handyman himself, because there's everybody thinks they can build a deck, but many decks fall down as a result.
Oh, no.
And then it's sometimes surprising to see what a builder chose not to do or not to do well. Drainage is a big example there. I'm almost convinced that it's the last thing that gets thought of around a home. And water is a big issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially lately. My goodness.
Yeah, during the drought, it was not as
big
a deal,
an issue.
But the last year or so has been a big deal.
Yeah, no doubt. So what do buyers hope to gain? Like, if they have a home inspection, you talked about the surprises. Are you trying to eliminate those surprises that a year down the road they don't find out that they've got a drainage problem?
Yes, I guess the number one thing that I would say a buyer is looking for is insight. What is it I'm buying a home? What is it I'm getting? And even though there's a disclosure by the seller, that's usually a kind of a checklist kind of thing. It's a yes or no or I don't know. And what we do is supplement that substantially. I mean, we tell, at least in my reports, I tell the buyer thoroughly what I find and what's going on and how things are constructed and so on. And all of that leads to kind of some informed decisions that the buyer would make. It could be as simple as, what do I do after I own this home? Some of it could be, what do I need to negotiate with the seller right now before I actually close? But the net is to make some decisions. Now, in my case, I think the buyer typically would also say that they get a benefit in that they end up with a project list that they can do maintenance on the home or work on the home later. They aren't things necessarily that would have been A priorities to fix immediately, but they could use my report to work through things. I had one customer client call me the other day and said he'd been carrying my report around to Home Depot and to Ace Hardware as he did the projects that he'd identified there.
Has there ever been a time where you have kind of protected the buyer from some major problem that maybe they should reconsider this home?
I have had, I know of a few cases. First of all, I don't always know the final disposition of the
right.
sales transaction. I've had a few cases where the sales transaction did not close, and part of that decision was at least what was found in the home. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty rare instance, though. I don't see many cases at all where what I find terminates or prevents a transaction.
Right. But it could protect the buyer from something that they don't, they're not aware of, right?
Sure. I mean, there's one of the things that kind of guides, or in a major way guides an inspector, or I hope and guides most inspectors, is the building code.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that the home has to be at code, but the code is a definition of what is good and safe in today's construction world. And I was in a home, I've actually in two homes in the last 2 weeks where the gas appliances were in such a constrained space that they did not have enough air to really burn effectively, which mm-hmm. leads to carbon monoxide
right.
in the home. In both cases, people had been living in a home for years, but it was not a very safe situation. And so I think as a result of that, both of those utility closets ended up getting ducts or doors that allowed more air.
More ventilation.
In that way,
right.
I've, in a small way, contributed a little bit of safety in the home.
Right.
Yeah, you don't think about that. Our home is probably 40 years old and was built by a woman, Emily Ann Smith, and she was one of the first female construction people in the Southeast, and she's got all these series of homes. None of them are to code. I mean, our doors are narrow, and we just recently did a remodel. We have a window in the laundry room that goes to the garage that opens, which I didn't realize you can't have that because of the exhaust from the
right.
cars and things. So we had to make modifications in the remodel.
Right.
You never know about the things being to code.
And that's and remodeling is when you will have to bring things that you're changing up to the code. That's one of the times when
right.
the code comes into play for an existing home.
Right.
How do you stay current on all that? Is it by county, or how is it regulated by state?
Well, the code is a state entity.
Okay.
Codes are written by a number of organizations. The one that certifies me is the International Code Council.
Mm-hmm.
They write most of the building codes that are used, in fact, around the world. What happens, but there are other organizations like the electrical and plumbing organizations that write their own thorough codes.
Mm-hmm.
What a state does is adopt a set of codes, mixing maybe and matching from what exists, and then modifies those to meet any special needs that the state might have. Now, counties and jurisdictions can put tighter constraints on things. They cannot reduce the constraints on the building code.
Okay. There's a lot to know about
right.
that.
And then are those updated annually? or every few years?
They're updated every few years. The International Code Council releases theirs every 3 years. In the case of Georgia, that gets adopted. So we are, I think, right now on the 2006 code. There was a 2009 release that
that will come into play shortly.
Yeah. Wow.
And they're pages and pages long. I mean, it's a
that's why you need an expert.
Oh, it's like an encyclopedia.
Absolutely.
It gives them something to read at night, right? Mm.
Oh, you should see my code book. It's got highlights and marks all over it.
I bet it's dog-eared, huh? So tell us, maybe wrap it up and give us your contact information, and maybe, again, let our listeners know what makes you different from other home inspectors.
Well, the contact information is, website is Home Precepts. That's HomePrecepts.com. Cell phone is 678-575-9280, or you can email me at ronu@homeprecepts.com. First of all, I would say there's a lot of well-qualified and professional inspectors in Atlanta. Some of the things that I look at that put me in that group are that, first of all, as I mentioned, I'm certified. I'm certified by what I believe is the most rigorous organization in the country certifying inspectors. It's the people who write the building codes and have the highest authority related to them. I'm fully trained by the Georgia Association of Home Inspectors, and I subscribe fully to their standards of practice. I use it to guide every inspection I do. I've got a number of comments on my website and letters from customers that attest to my professional service. Lastly, I think the report that we do is best in class. It's computer prepared. Average report's 50 pages. Digital photography, usually about 70 or 75 photos in there. I always provide a summary to it because 50 pages is a lot to find a detailed point. So there's usually a two-page summary that brings out the highlights and serves as an index. Also gives the client a short list that they can deal with the primary issues.
The Home Depot honeydew list.
Yep. Or the negotiation list with the seller. And lastly, I deliver that electronically shortly after the inspection, but I always send a bound hard copy that has probably a shelf life of a couple of years if need be.
Terrific.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, great stuff. Thanks for being with us today, Ron. We appreciate your expertise, and really, there's so much to know about it. Whether you're buying or selling a home, the home inspection is a huge part of it. But then when it comes time to closing, everybody kind of holds their breath and go, oh, no, I hope it goes okay.
I hope everybody did their job.
Yeah, it's been said that closing on a home can be as stressful as like a death or a divorce, and you're like, wow. Maybe I've just had someone really good do my closing, and that's why it went so smoothly. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. This morning we have Pam Robinson of Neal and Robinson Attorneys at Law. Welcome.
Good morning.
So, Pam, I'm sure that when you do a closing, you put folks at ease and they're not holding their breath, right?
We try to.
But there's a lot to be said for having people prepared and the legal documents that the seller has to have on hand. Walk us through that process.
Basically, when a seller gets ready to list their house, there are certain documents that they should be able to provide their agent, such as the warranty deed that they received when they bought the property, information about the homeowners association, if there is one, and information about their mortgages that are against the property.
Okay. And what are the most important factors in making the closing go smoothly, other than just having all those documents prepared?
Truly, the most important factor is the professionals you work with. This market, the rules are changing daily, and you need someone who is very up-to-date on what's going on in the market. And the most important professional that this seller will work with is their agent. They really need to find someone who has the experience and works in this daily, and that agent will be able to direct them towards other professionals that can help them with anything, any issues that come up during the closing process or the transaction.
Now, whose team are you on, the buyer or the seller?
In a closing, most of the time, the closing attorney represents the buyer's lender. Usually, we're the only attorney involved, so we have to help all parties through the transaction, but we do represent the lender who is financing the property.
Right.
If it's a cash deal, in the contract, it will state whether we represent the buyer or the seller.
So in a cash deal, that's a different scenario.
Correct.
Now, do the sellers need an attorney?
It's always an option for the seller or the buyer to have their own attorney. In Georgia, most of the time, we are the only attorney involved in the transaction. And again, if the parties are working with professionals, those professionals, either the closing attorney or the agent, will direct them if they feel like there's an issue that they need someone to represent them directly.
Right. You like to have lots of lawyers involved. In
it's always
you do,
a lot
right?
of fun to have lawyers and engineers.
Right. Only good thing will happen if you have two or three lawyers in there.
You know, how can a seller be sure that they're protected from the buyer backing out at the last minute?
Again, I go back to the agent because the agent's so important. If they have a qualified agent who can write a good contract, knows what to be on the lookout for, that's always important. Also, having enough earnest money in the transaction is very important so that anyone who's thinking about backing out has to think about what they might lose
right.
in the earnest money.
What's a good percentage for earnest money?
Well, you know, there's different theories on that. A lot of people say, 1 to 10%.
1 to 10?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The purchase price.
Right.
You were talking about documents earlier and what the seller needs to provide the buyer concerning the home prior to closing. I'm sure the inspection and some of those things come into play at that point. What other things does the seller need to bring to the closing?
Just generally, things people forget quite often are the keys to the house, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
And the garage door openers. They'll walk out and say, oh, my gosh. We don't have keys. So just the general things such as keys, garage door openers, any warranties on appliances, those are always nice to give the new buyer. Any invoices for work that was either completed prior to closing or in conjunction with closing.
What about like security system stuff?
That's always important. Usually the seller is closing out their account, but they will, give all that information to the buyer so they can call and set up their own security systems.
Right.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought about that. So all of those things I'm saving in the shoebox, it's for
That's
a reason.
It.
Very good.
Yeah,
very good seller.
Make sure I bring my shoebox, right?
Put a bow on it and give it to him as a present.
Now, why is Neil and Robinson a good choice?
You know, as you talked about earlier, there are a lot of people who get into real estate as the market's good. This is our business. The attorneys in our firm, we've all been doing this for a number of years. The firm's been in business for over 15 years. I've been doing this for 25 years, and we do 90% to 95% residential real estate. Again, the rules are changing daily, from everything from financing to the contracts. They're all changing, and we're up to date because we do a good bit of business and we understand it. We're also very concerned that everybody in the transaction feels comfortable with what's going on. As you said, this is a very stressful time. And it's going to be stressful, but we try to take as much stress out as we can by being proactive and getting information to the parties ahead of the closing so that when they get to closing, it's not such a bad experience.
Do you get burnt out of doing, closing after closing? Like, aren't they all kind of mold together in this one big closing in your head?
Everyone is different.
Really?
It really is. Everybody's different about what they're buying, how excited they are,
right.
Who's involved. Why they're buying. It really is a fun job.
A fun job.
It wow. really is.
I would never have put those words together.
No, I wouldn't have either. Do you do any work on refinances?
We do. We love doing refinances.
So what's fun about that?
The fun thing about that is people aren't as stressed.
Right.
And you hear all kinds of stories. Sometimes I feel like a bartender or a psychologist.
Oh, I bet. I bet you do hear a lot of good stories.
But we, just having people come in our office, it's profitable for us, and we enjoy it.
There you go.
Speaking of your offices, where are they?
We have offices all over Atlanta. We have offices in Gwinnett, Stockbridge, Midtown, Mansell Road, West Cobb, and here in Sandy Springs.
Now, do most closings take place in your office?
They do.
So you get all the action.
We do. It's like a revolving door all day long, hopefully.
Like, what's the most number of closings in a day you've done there?
Well, there are a number of attorneys in my office, and it's not unusual that we'll do, 30 in a day.
Wow.
But that may be four or five attorneys doing that. So
that's a lot of houses being.
But there are days we don't do any, so it kind of evens out.
That's a lot of pens, too. I bet y'all have,
blue pens.
And
that's the other thing to bring.
And the little yellow stickies, right?
Correct.
The little flags on all the pages.
Sign here.
Unbelievable. And a lot of coffee, too.
And notary? Need a notary there?
We're all notaries.
You're
all the
notaries?
Attorneys are notaries, and most of our staff are notaries.
So it's
also
a turnkey experience there.
We hope so. We do our best to make it that way.
And now I understand a notary can marry someone in the state of Georgia.
I mean,
you could do weddings too.
Not true.
It's really not true.
Urban
not
myth.
That's not on my list of things I'm allowed to do now.
You can't add that to the marquee.
While you're here, then getting your house, I now pronounce you man and wife.
Yeah. How bizarre! Yeah, I need to go back and research that because when someone told me that,
it's probably an email.
Now there are certain states that notaries can marry.
How strange is that? You know what? It's all coming back to me now. It's one of my clients.
Kansas.
No, it's not Kansas. Good things happen in Kansas. Good things come from Kansas. It's Florida. A friend of mine is getting married 10-10 of 2010. And they're really trying to cut costs on the wedding. And they were joking about that. But, yeah, you know, it is nice that you offer the personal touch because it can be kind of robotic. I mean, it seems like such a systematic process that people have to go through, but the personal touch is sure nice.
And we enjoy our job, and we hope people enjoy coming to our office.
And again, how can folks reach you?
We can be reached a number of ways, but we have a main number, 404-459-9600, and any of our attorneys, any of our offices can be reached through that number. We also have a website, www.neel.com.
Terrific. Any final thoughts, Lee? Great show.
I think we covered it, right? Do we hit everybody that should be in this process? Got everybody?
I think so.
That's good. We need the actual person with the house. That's who we forgot.
It is exciting, though. When you think about it, that's a big step in someone's life. And to share in that excitement, whether it's on the inspector end or the finance side or even the attorney side, I had never thought of that being a job that someone would love, and it obviously
we learn
is.
Something new every week here,
Absolutely.
Amy.
Absolutely. So to our listeners, we hope you found this of value. We hope that you will contact our guests if you're in the market to sell or even buy a home. Exciting time, and I think the economy is going to get better. And, you know, Sandy Springs is a great place to live,
Great place to live.
Anywhere in metro Atlanta. To all of our listeners in Georgia, thanks for listening. And those outside of Georgia, maybe you need to come check it out.
Move here.
Yeah, move here. We've got the whole team of experts lined up for
That's
you.
That's it.
Until next week, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Have a wonderful week.